Hello and welcome to the Emmy Awards. I'm your host, Emmy Cardinale, and this is my podcast where I talk about what I've been watching or rewatching once a week. If this is the first episode of mine that you stumble upon and you enjoy it, please feel free to follow me wherever you listen to podcasts so you can get notified when I upload an episode. Like and subscribe if you're listening to this on YouTube. Thank you so much for tuning in. It means a lot. This episode, as the title suggests, will be about I Love LA episodes 5 and 6, and I will also be talking about The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. I think the reunion, I think I'm going to start with that actually because I have less to say about that. I mean, I have a lot to say, but my thoughts on that will be briefer. So I think I'll start with The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives and with I Love LA. My plan for the next few podcast episodes is going to be, I'm recording this Monday. My goal is to get it out Wednesday, and then I'm starting my Percy Jackson coverage. So my goal is to, I don't know what time the Percy Jackson episode drops on Wednesday, but my goal is to record Thursday, maybe Friday, to get out my Percy Jackson episode over the weekend. And then for the next I Love LA episode, I'm going to try to record Sunday or Monday to get the episode out Wednesday. So I'm going to kind of, in a weird way, going to be doing 2 episodes a week just for a little bit to like get into a groove. I don't really know. We'll see how it goes. This episode might take me forever, and then I don't know. But my goal for Percy Jackson episodes is, like, my Percy Jackson coverage is to get the episodes out over the weekend. And I Love LA, I believe there are only 2 episodes left. So maybe I'll do something like after these 2 episodes that I believe there are only 8 episodes of the season. So I think maybe the vibe for the next podcast episodes will be, maybe I'll do like a 2-episode recap for that and wrap that up. I was originally going to record this a bit earlier and just cover I Love LA episode 5, but I kept putting it off to the point where I was like, you know what? I think it's better if I just, instead of trying to get episode 5 out before episode 6 airs, I'll just wait until episode 6 airs and do like both in one episode. So that's what I'm doing. And my goal is to get this out before the Percy Jackson episode. So my next podcast episode will just be about Percy Jackson. And then I'll do like another, I think my goal for the next few podcast episodes is to do like more smaller ones than stress myself out about like, I need to record when both Percy Jackson and I Love LA, because they're airing on such like different days in terms of podcast recording that I think in order to stress myself out less, I'm just going to record sooner. I don't know. I'm not making any sense, but the next few weeks for the podcast will probably, they are going to be busy, but in terms of like release schedules, I think I might be doing 2 a week. I don't really know. This episode, my goal is to have it out Wednesday or Thursday. And then for my Percy Jackson season 2, episode 1, if it's a 2-episode premiere, I really do not know the details of when that episode airs. Genuinely have no idea. But my next podcast episode will be covering the premiere, if that's 1 episode or 2 episodes, of Percy Jackson, the series, season 2. Super excited. I've been very, very, very anxiously anticipating this. So that will be what I'm covering. And then I Love LA wraps up soon. I also recently finished all of Hacks. I had only watched season 1 of Hacks, and I breezed through seasons 2 through 4 all within like a couple weeks. And I do have a lot to say about that, but I have a lot to talk about in this episode and a lot of plans for the podcast for the next few weeks with Percy Jackson coming up and wrapping up my I Love LA season 1 coverage and all that stuff. So lots of fun stuff that I'm podcasting about lately. I'm really excited. So thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the episode. Like and subscribe, share with a friend, all that good stuff. I did originally, when I was mapping out the next few months for the podcast, I was like, well, there's a new, like, Vanderpump Rules is coming back. Maybe I'll have stuff to say about that. I did watch the premiere. I'm not super invested yet. That's my only take on Vanderpump Rules so far. I'm not particularly invested. They didn't hook me with the premiere. I'm not particularly, there was like one girl on the cast who I like liked. All the men I found insufferable. I'm not super vibing with the new cast, but I think there's just something, sorry, last little rant, and then I'll get into the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives reunion coverage. Although this actually transitions really well into talking about the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. I think there's something so beautiful about like reality TV of yore, like old reality TV before influencing was really a thing, because it's like the people on Vanderpump Rules, they had aspirations to be artists, right? Like they were models, actors. That was the vibe of Sir. I believe it's Stassi says in the premiere, maybe it's Sheena, I don't remember. But like somebody in the pilot episode of Vanderpump Rules says all the employees at Sir want to be actors or models, and all other restaurant employees want to be employees at Sir, something like that along those lines. So like obviously they had aspirations, but it was different, if that makes sense. I don't know, I'm not vibing with them yet, and it's not necessarily because they want to be influencers, because I have nothing against that, but it's just like, I don't know. I think there's something about a reality TV show in this format specifically for me that's like, I'm following your lives, where it's like a housewives-esque show where it's like, well, I don't know. I don't have anything articulate to say. I just like, I'm not vibing with it yet. Like The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, that felt so compelling because they already were influencers and they already had that charisma and that was already carried over into a platform. And I'm not saying that if you are not successful as an influencer, you can't be a good reality TV star. I'm not saying that in any capacity. I think the influencer sphere, the content creation sphere, is so oversaturated that somebody could be genuinely very funny and compelling and interesting and not have gone viral or had a lot of success. For example, I think I'm a great example of this. I'm kidding. But like, I genuinely think I'm very funny and entertaining. And I think this podcast is amazing and super fun. And I love doing it. I don't know. Okay, so moving on to The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives Season 3 Reunion. Sorry for that extremely long-winded intro and mini Vanderpump Rules conversation. The Season 3 Reunion was a lot shorter than I thought it was going to be. I think Season 2's reunion was longer because Season 1 didn't have a reunion. So there was a lot that they had to condense, like they had to cover in the Season 2 reunion. And I have to say, I watched the Season 2 reunion more recently. Like I didn't watch it when it was airing and I did not like it. I'm not the biggest fan of Nick Viall, to be quite honest. I have nothing against him personally. I don't know the man. He's a stranger to me and I don't care enough to hate people that I don't know in my real life. His persona on the internet bothers me sometimes. That being said, when he was announced to be The Bachelor, whenever that happened, I was jumping for joy. I was like, finally, not a non-boring Bachelor. That was my perspective. Like, I think it's so funny to me now because I have such a disdain towards Nick Viall. And you know what? That's okay. He has one for me too. Not really, not personally, but he's very, very demeaning to podcasters and shows that are smaller than him's that I just like immediately have an ick towards him. As somebody who's been podcasting for almost 4 years with like literally no financial success or really any success at all in any capacity, it's been a very meaningful project for me personally and I enjoy doing it for fun. Like I'm not, you know, would it be nice to make like money out of it? Yes. I mean, I did get my first paycheck from RSS. It was for $1.50. So that was cool. But like, you know, I have a lot of appreciation for, and this is why I'm not trying to shit on influencers when I'm talking about people who want to be influencers on Vanderpump Rules. I'm not trying to shit on influencers because I genuinely have a lot of appreciation for people who like have no platform, no in, and they like build one. I think that's extremely impressive. And so that is my biggest gripe with Nick Viall. I think he's very rude and unkind to smaller creators who, in my opinion, building a platform is a lot more impressive for them because they didn't start off with an immediate platform. And yes, being cast on reality TV, that is a value within itself. But like a lot of it is luck and timing. Nick Viall got cast in the Bachelor franchise in like a very, very good era for it when it was doing really well, when it was kind of emerging, people could get careers, but you didn't have the like stigma of like if you went on and you wanted a career of you being fake or being there for the wrong reasons, right? Like timing was very, very important for Nick Viall. And when he decided to become a podcaster, he already had all this built in following from all this exposure he got on reality TV. And again, not to, That was work that he put in. He went through a lot on the show and like put in a lot of effort. Okay. I was a fan of Nick Viall on the show. I'm not shitting on him in that capacity. I just think that when you are not somebody who has a reality TV platform and you have to build something purely just based off of like people find your content and they like you based off of your content, not like you already had like a built-in following, so people are going to tune in because they already knew you, and then maybe, and then it'll grow, and that's still impressive. And I'm not trying to shit on Nick Viall in any capacity, okay? I just don't like the way he talks about small podcasters. Anyways, sorry for going on a Nick Viall tangent. My point was, when I watched the season 2 reunion, I didn't like Nick Viall as a host. And I was excited for Stassi to be the host. And I have to give whoever edits like the promos credit, because I was like, oh, this is going to be good. And I do think it was slightly better. But I think one thing this illuminated for me is that it was less about Nick Viall. My issues were less about Nick Viall and more about the structure of the way the reunions are formatted. Like, I saw so many people being like, Andy Cohen would have done a better job. And I genuinely don't think that Andy Cohen, maybe he would have done a slightly better job at like pushing back at people and being a little bit more, like, digging in a bit more. But I think it's less about that and more about the structure of the reunion. Like, they just hop around and like one person shares a traumatic story and then somebody gets emotional and Stassi's like, what is that triggering for you? And it's like, why? It's a very odd situation. Like, for example, there was a moment where Jason and Michaela were talking about their storyline this season, about Michaela's, about their intimacy issues and that stemming from Michaela's trauma. And then Jesse was like, that really resonated with me because I, in doing all this therapy to navigate my relationship with Jordan, I uncovered a trauma that I was sexually assaulted, and that obviously made things more complicated. And I also have struggled with intimacy in that same capacity because, like, not, you know, like, she kind of jumped off of that. And I have no issue with Jesse sharing her story. I just feel like Jesse and Jesse and Jordan had a huge storyline this season. We could have had a segment later. Like, Michaela and Jace could have gotten their due. They could have processed that. Stassi could have been like, thank you so much for sharing, and moved on from that. And then when they were, then they could have moved on to a segment specifically about Jordan and Jesse. And then in that segment, Jesse could mention this thing that, like, have her own proper moment to talk about this trauma. And she could then even relate it to Michaela and be like, I resonated with your story after the fact, not as like a segue of like, you're talking about something traumatic that happened to you. Something traumatic also happened to me. Then Demi starts getting emotional, or Connor hops in and he's super kind and like super gracious, once again, relating and understanding and validating. And then Demi's emotional and Stassi's like, what is this triggering for you, Demi? And it's just like, why are we hopping around people's in like deeply personal stories this way? Am I the only one who feels like that's a little bit, I don't like the format of the reunion. That's my biggest issue. I don't think Stassi did a bad job. I don't think that the structure, I don't like it. Maybe some people like it. I don't like it. I don't like it. And I think if I was a cast member on this show, obviously I'm not, who cares about my opinion, but I feel like I would be so like deeply uncomfortable to in any capacity, like either bring up my story or like if I was sharing my story for it to then like move, like it kept segueing into other things. And then Jason and Michaela barely got like to really dive into their story. And maybe they had like a time limit. I need to know how long it was filmed. And if this was a very long filming day, why did we only get an hour? Anyways, sorry, I'm going on all these unnecessary tangents, but like, I really didn't like the format of the reunion. Also, like the way they, I also wish it was a bit more chronological, if that makes sense. Like, I wish, something I genuinely really appreciate about Bravo reunions is they kind of go through like the season. They're like, okay, this happened and this happened, and they do it somewhat more chronologically. Where I just felt like I didn't know where we were gonna jump to next, and it felt very disjointed and confusing. Like, Chase is brought out and they like tease our Taylor and him doing anything. Also, like, I don't know, maybe this is an unpopular opinion, but I feel like they need to film the reunions closer to when the season actually airs, because based off of season 3 and the fact that we got them filming the season 2 reunion like towards the end of season 3, it's really giving like they film, and I believe the reunion was filmed in August or September, because Michaela and Macy posted talks about them being like 5 weeks postpartum and they had their babies in July. So I believe it was filmed in like late August, early September. So that was before Taylor was announced to be the Bachelorette. Like, I feel like they need to film the reunion a little bit closer. And I understand that, like, Taylor was going to be the Bachelorette, so, like, But they could have filmed it, like, in October. Why? I don't know. They should have filmed it late October, in my opinion. I really didn't like the format. It was entertaining, though. It was entertaining. I didn't get bored. I was locked in the whole time. The conflict was really good. The part that bothered me the most about the reunion is, once again, the Demi of it all. I have such a complicated feeling towards the Demi storyline. Because I think, fundamentally, it's very dangerous to have this kind of rhetoric about sexual assault of, like, their questioning of Demi, because a lot of the things that they take issue with, I'm like, people do react in, like, weird ways when they're in these weird situations. For me, that's never been my issue with Demi. My issue with Demi is really the way that she talks about her experiences in relation to other people. That's where Demi really loses me and begins to frustrate me, because I feel like there's a much more, like, there was a way that she could have just been like, hey, I went through this, we're both public figures, I didn't want it to get out because I was going through all these things and I reacted weirdly because I was so stressed out emotionally and, like, acting in fight or flight because of the weird situation that I was in and the fact that, like, I was worried it would look bad and I didn't want to, like, she could have framed it in so many different ways that was like, Macy, how would you feel if somebody commented that, like, that's not appropriate. That is my biggest issue with Demi. Like, I really, really became irritated in that whole situation when she was trying to be like, Macy, how would you feel if you got slapped or whatever, direct quote, and then you said that you loved him and people were like, well, why would you say you loved him? And it's like, you can communicate a sentiment that, like, people who are victims, people who are in traumatic situations, act weirdly to the outside eye. You can communicate that without saying, how would you feel if you were in my shoes and somebody was questioning you? Because the two are not the same. The two are not the same. It really, really just, like, grinds my gears. I also, like, really did not like the way that Demi was so aggressive towards Jen. Like, the way she yelled at Jen really, really frustrated me. It upset me. The fact that she was like, what's wrong in your head? I have such a hard time with Demi. I really do. I really do. And it does make me sad that Marciano is suing her for defamation, because I just hate this era we're in where people make accusations and then they're sued for defamation, because I hate it. Like, the thing is, for me, if I was advising Demi, I would say what you should say is, I shouldn't have compared my situation to other people. I understand that from the outside looking in, it might be confusing, but the reality of these situations is that a lot of the times it doesn't make logical sense because your brain is not reacting logically to the perceived threat. And as women, we are taught to not be difficult. Fawning is a very real response. Like, there are so many logical, valid ways that she could communicate what she went through and her thought process and, like, why it might not be confusing. Because all of those things are true. All of those things are true, that people who are victimized in certain situations do placate people. They do sometimes go back. They go back. They consensually then initiate some kind of encounter with a person who non-consensually assaulted them. Well, that's an oxymoron. You can't consensually assault somebody. But, like, it's not uncommon that somebody will pursue a relationship, do something consensually with somebody who violated their consent earlier because they're trying to rewrite the narrative in their head. It's not unfathomable and impossible that Demi could have reacted in a way that appears odd to people on the outside while genuinely having been a victim. That's not weird to me. That's not impossible. That is completely plausible. My issue with Demi has always been the callousness with which she talks about other people's experiences. The inability to say, I understand how this might seem odd to some people. I think there's a way that you can be dialectical about things where you're like, I was doing the best I can in the moment, and I understand how it doesn't make sense to other people. You know what I mean? The part where Demi loses me is like the black and white thinking. She's like, well, you can't, like, there's no, I understand how from the outside it looks odd that I was doing this. You know what I mean? That is where Demi loses me. And also, my biggest issue with Demi is that outside of this whole Marciano situation, there were a lot of problems that the women had with Demi, and now the only conversation has been either Demi's lying about this and she's horrible for lying about this, or the women don't believe Demi and Demi was a victim and the women don't believe Demi. Like, I literally saw, she did like an interview, and the person giving the interview question was like, a lot of your issues with the women stem from the situation with Marciano. That is factually not true. These women have issues with you for a reason. And because they have issues with you, it's easier for them to discredit you. If somebody's wronged you many, many times, and to you, they appear to be a liar. They appear to be unreliable. They appear to be like malicious in certain moments, completely insensitive to your own feelings or anybody else's feelings. Like, there are a lot of character traits of Demi's that the other women probably feel about her that make Demi's lying about this make sense. The issue isn't that they don't believe Demi. The issue is that they have problems with Demi that make her being a liar seem more plausible to them. The moment where Demi, I really, really began to be very, very confused about her was when they were relitigating the situation with Chase during press, because she was so adamant that, like, he touched me and that was wrong, end of story, that it, like, really, there's nuance, though. There is nuance. He touched you, and that wasn't a shove. He touched you, and it wasn't appropriate to tell Brett he put his hands on me. You know what I mean? There's no distance and ability to be like, I was upset in that moment, and I was uncomfortable with the way he touched me, and I understand that I escalated the situation unnecessarily, and I understand that my words matter, and I shouldn't go to my husband and say this man put his hands on me when he brushed past me and poked me. Even if in that moment the poke felt like it was something bigger, the facts of the situation are that he did not cause me physical harm, so I should not have framed it as if he did. You know what I mean? Anyways, sorry. It did really anger me when, like, the way she spoke to Jen, the fact that Zach tried to be like, hey, can we, you please speak to her respectfully? Demi is like, I'm going to speak to her how I think she deserves to be spoken to. Like, to me, I just don't like her. However, me not liking her, to me, is not factor at all in whether I believe that she experienced some kind of unwanted touch. I don't like Demi. I have to be honest, I don't like Demi. She rubs me the wrong way. I don't enjoy watching her on TV. I'm not a fan of hers. And I don't think that that automatically means that she was not, that she's lying about Marciano. And the moment, well, not the only moment, because the moment where she said to Macy, like, once again, tried to compare her situation to Macy, that irritated me. But then also when she said to Jen, you don't understand this because you haven't been sexually assaulted, have you? And Jen goes, I actually have. I just haven't talked about it. That was so unbelievably inappropriate. And again, this is where Demi loses me. It's like, you speak to people with a callousness that really, really, I don't like it. I don't like it. I'm also just somebody who, like, I think words matter a lot. And it's genuinely a struggle I have on the internet because I'm like, I'm not the fact checker. I don't need to, like, comment things. But, like, I will literally see situations where people will, like, most of the time, honestly, it's just about TV, because when there's, like, genuine misinformation, thank God people will already correct it. But, like, sometimes I will see somebody talk about a scene in television or a situation, and they're like, they use a word that, to me, I'm like, that's not factually what happened. You can still be upset with what happened without saying this is what happened when it wasn't what happened. That was your perception. You know what I mean? I care a lot about, like, things being what actually happened. And I think that's where I struggle with Demi, because there's no ability to be like, I was uncomfortable that he touched me and he didn't shove me. You know what I mean? Where she really loses me. Because for me, if I was in Demi's situation and I was inappropriately touched, the extent that she's told us, maybe it was more where they were two ass grabs. So that's being groped. If I was groped in that capacity, and then I try to put myself in her shoes, right? I was friendly with him. I understand that we're on camera. So I'm like in my head thinking it's going to be portrayed a certain way. All of these things, I don't want it to come out. So I try to be his friend. If I'm putting myself in her shoes, I still don't understand comparing that to what Macy and Michaela have been through. I don't understand wielding it in the way she does to Jen, of being like, you can't understand because you haven't been assaulted, as if you know somebody, like, that's something that you shouldn't, I would never say to somebody, you don't understand what it's like because you've never tried to kill yourself, which is something that I've experienced. I would never say that to somebody because I don't know the intricacies of somebody's life, and people don't need to disclose suicide attempts just as they don't need to disclose assaults. Like, I don't need to know somebody's, it's just deeply, deeply insensitive. But anyways, sorry, I didn't mean to go on a whole tangent. I just think I'm really frustrated because I think the conversation around Demi, the things that people are using to discredit her, it's like, but there are actual situations that's actually, like, she's not wrong to say that people who have been victimized do sometimes maintain a relationship with somebody who touched them in an unwanted way after the fact. She's not wrong to say that. That is true. That doesn't discredit her. It's hard because I understand why Demi is like an unreliable narrator to people, and I understand why people don't like her, because I don't like her. But I also think the way that people are talking about her situation, it does miss a lot of like the reality of the way that people do react weirdly in weird situations. I also think that she is talking about it in a very ineffective way as well. Also, okay, sorry. I went on this whole tangent and I forgot to mention this, but in the moment that I mentioned earlier where Jesse opens up and then Connor speaks and then Stassi's like, Demi, what is this triggering for you? Demi says, this is triggering deep wounds for me about things that I know that I've experienced, but I haven't uncovered yet. And it just, the way Connor talked about it, it felt like little me was getting a hug. And I don't mean to disbelieve anybody, but I'm like, what does that mean? Demi very often says things and I'm like, I don't actually know what you're talking about. And I'm not saying that I'm owed your deep personal trauma, but it's like, what do you mean this is triggering deep wounds? I don't understand. I'm very, very confused. Stuff that I know that I've been through, but I haven't uncovered. If you haven't uncovered it, then you don't know that you've been through it. It also feels a little bit like somebody just opened up that they uncovered a memory and you're saying, I know that I've been through stuff. And it's like, I don't know. And I don't remember half of my childhood, okay? Maybe I have stuff that I need to uncover. I would never say I know that I've been through stuff if I haven't uncovered it yet in therapy. I the way she talks about things just really, really confuses me, because it's like, what does that mean? What does that mean? It triggered a deep wound. A deep wound that you were abused in that way as a child, or a deep wound of not being believed because you grew up in an environment where you were like very constantly invalidated? Because I understand that. I understand not feeling believed and really feeling deeply misunderstood and being defensive of your reality and your feelings because you feel like you were constantly told, you're like, I'm upset, and you're told constantly there's no reason for you to be upset. Like, is that what you're talking about? I just don't understand. Anyways, I do wish her well. I'm sad she's getting sued. At least she has money to defend herself, because being stuck in a legal battle with no recourse sounds like hell. So at least she has some kind of financial stability to support her. I also hate Brett. I hate Brett. So I have such a hard time because I don't like Demi. And I also think the way that some people are talking about her allegation, like the allegations, isn't okay as well. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? But anyways, was there anything else I wanted to talk about with the reunion? Oh, there was. Okay, sorry. Very briefly. Or not briefly, who cares? I have all day. When Dakota came and they sent all the women back, that pissed me the fuck off. Like, why are you doing that? So annoying. I appreciated we got more info about the timeline, because it was very unclear. Dakota and Taylor have broken up so many times that it's like, when did this happen? It was very, very, I really appreciated finding out that like this happened in one of the times when they were on a break early on. It was when she was pregnant. That really does change things, because I thought maybe, like, obviously they were on and off, but then after they had Ever, she found out the Jenna stuff, they like broke up more solidly and they were apart for a longer period of time. I think for like a year before they rekindled at Stagecoach, before she ultimately found out this and then ended it for good. I think if it happened in between that time, it would still be inappropriate because of who it happened with. But I think the timing is extremely important, because the fact that she was like either pregnant or very recently postpartum, they were up and down. And also, and I believe I was talking to my sister about this, so if she said this, and I'm not trying to plagiarize her, but like, if Dakota is telling you, like, if you're Taylor and Dakota's telling you, I want to get back together, I want to get married, like, let's be a family, while at the same time betraying you in this way, like, that is the point. It's not like they're broken up and he is also like, I don't want to be with you. You're both broken up. You agree. You're broken up, but he is telling you that he wants to get back together and he wants to marry you. And he, you know what I mean? That is the part that's like, then you can never really believe, if you're in a relationship, that he's genuinely in it, because he was telling you that he wanted to be in it and he was committed to you and he wanted to get back together with you while also doing all of these things. So it's like, it's about the moment where it happens, you know? It's like, maybe, yes, they weren't technically together, but it's like, if things are rocky and we've been on and off and the whole time you're telling me that you want to be on again while you are doing this, then there is no reality in which I will feel comfortable being in a relationship with you, because I'll be wondering the whole time if your words actually equal your actions. You know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of layers to it. And I mean, I'm glad that they're done. Again, I wish this was recorded a little bit later because it's like we got a very brief voiceover that Stassi mentioned that clearly it was off base and it was meant to be like, oh, we talked about this in the reunion, when clearly they didn't, because she mentioned it to Dakota, like, your relationship with Taylor has been so on and off, now she's going to be the Bachelorette, and that was set off face, so that was definitely recorded after the fact. We couldn't have had Taylor's going to be the Bachelorette at the reunion. I wish that that was talked about, but sorry I talked about the Demi stuff for so long. I just have so much to say about it. I think that's all I wanted to say about the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives Season 3 reunion. Moving on to I Love LA, Episode 5, I believe, is where I left off. So last I left off, Charlie had met a guy named Lucas, and he was going to be his stylist. He's like a Christian guy, and that's where we pick up Episode 5. Maya is still... Anyways, if you've been listening to my last episodes, you know the characters and where we left off. Sorry. Episode 5 is called They Can't All Be Jeremy's. The episode opens with Maya and Dylan, like, walking down the street. They're, like, on a bridge, and a cop passes by, and then Maya says that she thinks they should get a gun. He's opposed, period. I love Dylan. And then she suggests a Birna, I don't remember how it's pronounced. I write my notes, and then I forget what they said in the episode. It's a non-lethal pistol, and you need, like, security guard training to own one. And then she pulls up her phone to, like, show him and drops her phone. And he's like, this is exactly why we can't have a gun, because if that was a gun, you would have just shot me. And she's like, no, but I wasn't treating it like it was a gun. Okay, now I'm going to pretend. And she pretends her phone's a gun, and they like struggle for it, and she drops it off the side of the bridge. Some guy gets it, and then he threatens her. Like, we don't see the guy, but like he has an actual gun because we hear gunshots and they run. She loses her phone, and then the title card, I Love LA. At Alyssa 180, Maya is negotiating a brand deal with Kia for Tallulah. She's like doing a great job negotiating. I enjoyed this. I liked seeing Maya in her element. She and Courtney, her colleague, celebrate after. At Alani's place, Tallulah and her girlfriend Tessa, the chef. I mentioned the chef. I don't remember if the chef was in the last episode or just in episode 3. But anyways, whatever episode the chef was in, her name is Tessa. Apologies to her for not knowing her name. I believe they only called her Cute Chef in the first episode she was in. But anyways, Tessa, they're in bed. Tallulah's talking about Hannah Montana and how the part where Miley took off her wig was like big for her. She's getting chills thinking about it. Real me. Me. So true. That movie always stressed me the fuck out because I was like, okay, now everybody knows she's Hannah Montana. The fact that they did address it in the show when she actually finally reveals that she's Hannah Montana, like on a global scale, it is brought up that like all these people in this town kept it a secret, which is fun. But that stressed me out so much when I watched it because I was like, okay, it's out now. Something I think is so funny, and I loved this as a kid and I still think it's funny, is that they had like a bit where like the president knew who Hannah Montana was, as if it was like an international secret. That cracked me up. Anyways, Maya is calling Tallulah, but she sends it to voicemail. And then after Tallulah's in the kitchen listening to the voicemail from Maya, it's about the Kia deal. Tessa comes out of the bedroom. Tallulah's making her coffee. And then Tessa's like impressed by the deal. It's like 30 grand, I think, or something for a couple posts. And she asks if Tallulah can drive. And Tallulah says she's driven before, but she doesn't know how to drive. Whatever that means. Alani and a man named Garrett come out into the kitchen from like their bedroom or whatever, or Alani's bedroom. It's not Garrett's bedroom. Anyways, Tallulah asks Alani if she can teach her how to drive, and Alani's super excited. She says that driving in LA is like the one thing she's mastered. Tallulah asks Garrett if he wants to stay, and he's like no, and he heads out. And once he leaves, Tallulah's like, so? And Alani's like, yeah, we're just casual. And then he comes back in quickly, forgot his bike lock, and then he leaves again. And Alani clearly really likes him. Back at Alyssa 180, Maya and Alyssa are having lunch. And Alyssa says that Maya's work ethic reminds her of herself when she was her age. She tells her that Alyssa 180 is going to be featured in Forbes. Then Courtney briefly comes in to ask about a vacation request. And then when she leaves, Alyssa's like, poor Courtney. Hopefully she finds somebody soon. Like, they're basically saying Courtney is old. Well, not old, but Courtney is single and depressed. Not depressed. They think it's sad that she's single. Maya says that they're so lucky to have great partners. Like, she and Alyssa are... What's up? I'm leaving in some of my cat meowing for my sister, but anyways, sorry, I lost my train of thought because he's meowing. Anyways, Maya says that she and Alyssa are so lucky to have partners, and Maya says it's crazy that she's never met Jeremy, and Alyssa's like, that is crazy. He knows all about you. He is her partner and closest collaborator, and Maya's like, it must be nice to never have to stop talking about work. All the cats are talking now. That's one of my foster kittens. Cat ASMR. Anyways, Jeremy knows all about Maya. He is Alyssa's partner and closest collaborator. And Maya's like, it must be nice to never stop talking about work. Alyssa's like, he's a music producer. I ask him his opinion on a lot of stuff. Maya says that Dylan does some music stuff too. And Alyssa's like, we should double date. Tomorrow night, Jeremy loves to cook. Come starving. Tallulah and Alani are in the car and Tallulah's driving. And Alani says that people in LA get into an accident every 6 months. So when it happens, she shouldn't freak out. Tallulah's like, I don't want to get into a car accident. Why would you say that? And Alani's like, no, it's okay. That just means you're safe for another 6 months. She's like, it's like when you see your babysitter get struck by lightning or you see adult twins. I don't know what she means by that. Like, it's good luck. Well, I'm a twin and I'm an adult. So you're welcome, Alani. I'm good luck, I guess, apparently. Or maybe not. I don't know. That's what I took it to mean, because I don't want it to mean something bad because I'm a twin. As somebody who lives and drives in LA, I have not gotten into a car accident every 6 months. I've never gotten into a car accident. My car is very badly scratched up, but that is self-inflicted from parking. Like, my car gets scratched because I am bad at parking and I scratch it up against poles and stuff. And you know what? I think it's been more than 6 months since I badly scratched my car. Anyways, they're, like, at a stoplight and Alani's like, you turn left when it's red. It's your turn. Tallulah really struggles. People are honking at her. And that is something I had to learn about driving in LA, because other places, if it's a left turn, most of the time you, like, yield. Or, like, you turn on yellow at the latest. Or there's like a arrow. When I moved to LA is when you're at a red light, like a couple cars turn left on red. That was new to me. Anyways, I had to learn that from experience. Nobody told me that. That's not in the driver's test, because I did have to take a driver's test to get my California license. Anyways, Alani, meanwhile, while Tallulah's driving, right now they're at a stoplight. Alani's checking her phone and Tallulah asks if it's Garrett. Alani lies and is like downplaying how much she likes him. But Tallulah can tell. And she wants to help. Alani texts him. Alani's like, he's a fuckboy. And Tallulah says, he's a fuckboy now, but you just have to make him, like, obsessed with you. And then Alani replies, you're right. I need to stand in my motherfucking power and text him right now and tell him how much I care about him. Which was so cute. I love Alani. She's my favorite character. I love her. Tallulah's like, no, what are you doing? She grabs the phone from her and she says that Alani needs to be mean and trick him. Cars behind, meanwhile, are honking. Tallulah doesn't want to make a left. She's like, I want to make a right. She and Alani switch. And I have to say, I'm a team Alani. And maybe this is why I just wouldn't want to date a man. Because I don't want to have to, like, be mean to you and trick you. Okay? I don't have time for that. That's so much energy. Like, if you like me, you like me. If you don't like me, you don't like me. Can we stop with this, like, I'm trying to trick you? And, like, because that's annoying to me. I'm with Alani. She should just tell him how much she cares about him. If he doesn't like that, then he sucks and he shouldn't, you know? Because Alani, I would love to hear that from you, girl. Obviously, you're a fictional character, but you know what I mean? It's like, that's sweet. Why do we have to? And I understand then it's like, maybe Garrett's just not looking to be in a serious relationship, and he doesn't have to be. He doesn't have to be wanting to be in a serious relationship. So I'm not, anyways, I'm overthinking this, but it's like, I hate this mentality of, like, trick him and make him obsessed with you. It's like, that's so annoying. Anyways, Charlie is showing Lucas options for the Vegas residency. Lucas's friends are there and they, like, pretend a little bit that it's up in the air, but Lucas quickly is like, it's been you the whole time. You're going to Vegas, and it's super, super cute. They talk about, like, Vegas. All their rooms are adjoined, I believe. I can't remember the word, but, like, they're all connected. All the rooms are connected, so you can easily check in with an accountability partner. And Charlie's like, what's an accountability partner? And they explain that they keep each other accountable when they're having sinful thoughts. Most of the time, it's pornography addiction. Like, if one of them's thinking about going to one of those websites, you know, they text each other. One of them texts, like, literally in that moment, and they all hug him and comfort him, and it's, like, super nice. Tallulah and Alani are in the car now. Alani is driving, and Tallulah is helping text Garrett. She sends him a nude of Alani, and is like playing hard to get.
He responds and is like, what are you doing?
Alani's like, well, I'm not doing anything. And Tallulah's like, no, you reply busy or something like that. Or like, oops, that wasn't for you. I'm busy, whatever. She's like playing hard to get. And Alani's like, but I'm not busy, I'm free. And it was like so cute. I just love Alani. In playing hard to get, then Garrett asks Alani on a wine date for the next day. So it worked out. I'm like, I mean, I guess it's better. It's like a more formal date instead of just like a, I don't know. I just hate all the back and forth. I hate all the games. It's like, it's so annoying. Why am I trying to 3D chess being in a relationship? If I was going to do that, I would just go on The Bachelor. Like, if I wanted to play the game of love, I would go on a reality dating show. Because then I would actually feel like I was doing something. Like, that would be fun for me, you know? It's like, in my real life, it's like, this isn't a game. There are no cameras. Nobody's watching me. I'm just entertaining nobody. Sorry. At Maya's place, Charlie's there. And Maya's, like, pacing, stressing him out. And she says that she needs to get her steps in. Dylan brings him a drink. Charlie has a bag of wigs. He's going to a wig party. And Maya says that they can't go. And then Dylan jokingly is like, we can't go because we have a dinner tomorrow. And she's like, don't joke. Alyssa finally sees her as a peer. And if Jeremy likes Dylan, they'll be couple friends. And that'll lead to Alyssa asking Maya to be in Forbes with her. And Dylan is like, dads at the school love me. And Maya's like, this is different. He's not one of the dads at your school. He has to talk about music. Maya told Alyssa that Dylan is a songwriter. And Dylan's like, I wrote one song one time for Mrs. Atwell's second graders. And it was about like, trash, pick up your trash. Maya was like, and it worked. Now they pick up their trash. It was a hit. That was funny to me. I love Dylan as a character. Charlie, it's like the morning now. Charlie's hooking up with somebody post-wig party. He's in his wig. And then he gets a text from Lucas to work out with his friends. And he's like, I need to go. The guy he's hooking up with is like, why? Just say no. And he's like, no, if you turn on pop stars, they'll turn on you. If you say no to a pop star, they'll turn on you. He shows up and they're like on a trail. They're helping one of their friends train for a half marathon. They're going to go do warm-up sprints. And he's like, yeah, warm-up sprints. And then he moves a little bit and he like vomits everywhere. And then they're all like, are you okay? And he's like, oh, you can make fun of me. Like, gross. I get it. I'm super gross. Like, you can totally make fun of me. And they're like, why would we do that? And Lucas sends his friends away. And he's like, I'm going to stay with Charlie to make sure he's okay. And he's like super nice to him. He's super nice. And he's like, I'm used to people making fun of me. Like, that's how my friendships are. And he's like, well, that's not the kind of friends we are. And it's like, it's very nice. It's a very sweet moment where he's expecting a reaction, but he doesn't receive that. He receives like a kind reaction. It was very sweet. It was very sweet. I enjoyed it. I appreciated it. Lucas is really sweet. He's like, I would invite you to go ATVing later, but you're precious cargo. As he's walking away, he's like, random thought, you rock. And then he adds him to their accountability squad group chat, which was sweet. It was sweet. Maya and Dylan arrived to Alyssa's house. Jeremy, who is played by Ben Feldman, who, by the way, went to my high school, not at the same time I was there, obviously. But when I was on the school newspaper, somebody on the newspaper did interview him. Not me, I wasn't there, I didn't meet him. But I did hear, when they were transcribing the interview with him, I heard most of it. Not most of it. I don't know how long it was, but I heard some of it while she was transcribing the interview. Do I remember it? Of course not. This was like a decade ago. Well, not, probably like 8 years ago. I don't know. I believe I was a senior. Does it really matter? Not really. Anyways, but he did go to my high school and I did watch Superstore just because he went to my high school and I liked him on Superstore. So anyways, go Bulldogs. Jeremy and Alyssa tell the story of how they met. They were like in public and they both wanted to say something, but they didn't know what to say to the other. And then Alyssa said something about the music and how much it sucked. And he was like, yeah, I know. I told the person to cool it on the cello, but I was just a producer. So basically it was like one of his songs or whatever. Dylan asks if Jeremy's met Rick Rubin. He's like, I'm sure you meet a lot of celebrities. Have you ever met Rick Rubin? And he's like, yes. And then Jeremy asks Dylan if he's read Rick's book. And Dylan's like, that's next to my list right now. I'm actually reading a book about the rise of the Third Reich. And Maya's like, let's not talk about a book about Hitler, which was so awkward. I just feel like Maya and Dylan are not compatible. They're not. And I'll get like, episode 6 was really rough for Maya and Dylan. And I feel like so stupid, like egg on my face. But you know what? Actually, not really, because I said early on in my recapping of I Love LA that like I feel like Maya and Dylan will eventually have some kind of issue because it feels very rare to introduce a couple at the beginning of a series and then just have them be happy forever. Like, that's not realistic. And I did say that I think a turning point for them will be Tallulah coming in and the way that Maya's focus on her job will impact their relationship. Like, I did say that. But then I had a brief moment there where I was like, they seem good. Like, he's reacting, like, chill to things. Like, maybe I underestimated them and they'll be good. But I think we're back to, like, I was on the right track at the beginning. Anyways, this episode's, like, it's the beginning of it. But episode 6 is when things are really rough between them. Anyways, I'll get to it. Sorry. But even here, it's, like, he's just talking about a history book he read and how it's important to, like, learn from history and how, you know, I'm, like, she's, like, no, let's not talk about something. Like, what? We can't talk about the fact that he doesn't like Nazis. That's a good thing to talk about. I appreciate the fact that he wants to learn about how Nazis came to power. God forbid somebody wants to educate themselves. I like that about him. Anyways, Jeremy then brings up Tallulah and Maya is like super excited. She's like making noises with her hands and talking about the deals and BAM and this and that. And he gets sensitive and like clearly has a reaction to it. And then he's like, sorry, I thought I felt a migraine coming on. Maya says she's Italian, so she talks with her hands. And then Maya asks what Jeremy's been producing lately, and he says he can't produce anymore because he gets headaches. Alyssa's like, I need to catch the microwave before it beeps. And he's like, is anybody wearing perfume? And Maya's like, yes, thank you for noticing. And Alyssa's like, oh, I'm so sorry to Jeremy. She's like, oh, I'm so sorry, Jeremy. I have COVID right now. I didn't notice. Which, this angered me. This really did anger me, but these are not real people and I must move on. It's just one of my biggest pet peeves in life is people just like acting like it's fine to go out in public ill, especially with something like COVID. I hate the way that COVID has become like, oh, who cares? I have COVID. Or even sometimes people are like, oh, it's fine. I don't have COVID, but they have like the flu or like a very bad cold. It's like, maybe we shouldn't spread illness. Maybe that's an unpopular opinion, but maybe we shouldn't spread illness. But anyways, she has COVID, so she didn't notice. The scents are bad for his headaches. He steps away. At Alani's place, Charlie is there. Alani asks if Charlie and Maya are like going out partying later. And he's like, no, she has this dinner. And Alani's like, she's always working now. Charlie's like, I think it's inspiring. Then Alani asks him about her outfit. He loves it. He tells her she rules, like random thought you rule, which like Lucas said to him earlier. She says he's being so cute. Then she shows him a nude that Garrett sent. And Charlie's like, I don't think Garrett would appreciate me seeing that. And she's like, you're being so weird lately. Then Charlie texts the accountability squad group chat saying that he's thinking about and they send him a photo. They heart his message and they send him a photo of them about to go ATVing. At Alyssa's house, Alyssa talks about Jeremy hitting a tree and now having migraines. Maya like hints to Dylan that he should go cook because Jeremy was supposed to cook, but Jeremy has stepped away. So he goes to the kitchen and he begins to cook. Maya and Alyssa are then alone and Alyssa talks a little bit about like how this wasn't really on her vision board, her relationship right now, kind of like her marital issues a little bit. Maya steps away to go pee. And as she leaves the bathroom, she sees Jeremy in a room. And there's a giant screen playing porn and he's jerking off, which is super weird and super awkward. And I don't like this guy. I don't like this guy at all. In the kitchen, Dylan is cooking the steak. Maya has already made the salad. She said earlier, she's like, I'm gonna go pee and then I'll make the salad. Maya tells Dylan about the situation and he laughs. And then Alyssa is there. She compliments the salad. Alyssa says she's sad that Jeremy is sleeping, says he's sensitive, can't be woken up during his naps, but he's so sensitive that when the Wi-Fi goes out, he wakes up and immediately texts her, which like, obviously we know as the audience, he's not napping in these moments. He's probably like jerking off and the Wi-Fi goes down. He notices because his content that he's consuming is turned off, right? Like that's what, anyways. Alyssa doesn't like how rare the steak is. So Dylan goes to cook it more. And when Alyssa and Maya are alone, Alyssa says she wishes Jeremy was here. Dylan's sweet for trying. Maya says they can't all be Jeremy's, which is the title of the episode. And then Alyssa suggests to Maya that she doesn't need to stay in this relationship with Dylan. She's young, she can always do better. Dylan comes back with the steak. Alyssa is like, Dylan, don't you think your hot girlfriend should be in Forbes with me? She says yes. And then she says they all need to get dinner together again when Jeremy's feeling better. At their house after Maya and Dylan debrief, and they agree about like the dinner sucking, like them being told to show up starving and then there being no food, about how weird it is that Jeremy was like jerking off when they were right there, like all of these things. And then Maya says that she feels bad for Alyssa because she really talks Jeremy up and says they're in a power couple, but he's a loser. And Dylan's like, I don't even like the idea of being
a power couple. Maya's like, yeah, but they're not one. And he's like, no, but even the concept, like they work to live, him and Maya, Alyssa and Jeremy live to work. They have this endless ambition. They'll never be satisfied. And he bets all they do is talk about work. And I thought this was such a like important statement because earlier when Maya was talking to Alyssa, she was like, it must be so nice to never have to stop talking about work. Maya's facial expression in this makes it clear that she and Dylan are misaligned here. And their relationship definitely on the rocks for sure. Then he goes to bed while she's like finishing up cleaning in the kitchen or something. I don't remember. And she's scrolling on her phone and she sees news that Lucas was found dead in an ATV accident. RIP. Really, really sad. Genuinely, I was not expecting him to die. And that was sad. That was sad to me. I'm so sorry that he's dead. This actor, the first time I saw him was, he was in One Day at a Time. And I really liked his character in One Day at a Time. He and Elena, like, had a, like, they, obviously they didn't date, but then she told him that she was gay. And he was like, you know, this has inspired me. I'm going to finally tell my family that I'm vegan or something. I love that. That was so funny. And I liked him in that show. So I like this actor. Anyways, sorry that he's dead. The character, the actor is alive and well. God bless. Episode 6 is called Game Night. So Maya and Tallulah are at a photo shoot for Ritz. They're being touched up by, or Tallulah specifically is being touched up by like makeup and everybody, and they're like joking about how much the guy's like into her. Then Tessa calls Tallulah. Then a Ritz employee, like representative, comes, checks in, asks if everything's going well. He's like, oh, is she calling her girlfriend? Then Maya's like, no, her girlfriend actually. And the Ritz representative loves that Tallulah is queer. And she drives off in a golf cart and we see a shot of Maya on the set. And then it cuts to the title card. I love LA. At the Forbes photo shoot, Maya shows Alyssa the Ritz ad and she's impressed. Then Maya asks if she looks like Nancy Pelosi with her glam and everything. And she's like, only if you're both bosses. They're getting ready to take the photo. And the reporter asks about I Am Me, which is Alyssa's former workplace. Like if her current workplace starting Alyssa 180 was a reaction to her previous experience with I Am Me. And you can kind of tell that this flusters Alyssa because she begins to not really be able to respond cohesively. So Maya like steps in and gives a quote about how when she was in college, a lot of the marketing, like a lot of the agencies were very much boys clubs and Alyssa 180 was like a nice change. Courtney comes in with a message for Maya, like a little card, and it's something about meeting. It says like, hi Lewinsky, obviously a reference to Monica. Meet at 2 p.m. in this restaurant by somebody named Ben, and Maya lies that it was Dylan asking to go to lunch with her. Tallulah, Alani, and Charlie are going to Lucas's funeral, but the funeral is full, so they send them to the overflow church, which is rude. And Charlie says, I can't believe they put us in the second overflow area. It's very insulting. It's like I was on the jerk-off thread. Like, who among us was on the jerk-off thread? That cracked me up. I'm not gonna lie. Someone named Andrew comes up to Charlie. It's his ex. And says it's a shame, asks if Charlie knew him personally. And Charlie's like, yes, I was his stylist. And then Andrew's like, oh, I didn't. Richie did. He came with this guy named Richie. Alani says hi. Clearly, they have history. Tallulah introduces herself. Then Andrew says he's moving to New York. It's awkward and tense. And once he leaves, Tallulah's like, that's Andrew. Like, clearly, if he's a character that they referred to earlier in the series, then I missed that. But obviously, they've referred to, like, they've talked about him before amongst themselves as characters because they all knew who Andrew was. I mean, Alani knew him because I imagine he's an ex of Charlie's. Anyways, Tallulah's like, that's Andrew, he's hot. And Charlie's like, it's weird that he approached me at a funeral. Like, why would he do that? And then Tallulah's like, I thought you weren't serious. And Charlie's like, we weren't serious, but we were like unserious for a large amount of time. Like, clearly there were some feelings there, which I understand. I think sometimes it's like, you weren't serious, but it's like, you were involved for a long enough period of time, it's like it's serious in some capacity, even if it's not serious, you know? They filmed a sex tape together, and he says that when he dies, he needs them to go to his apartment and burn it to the ground so no one ever sees that tape. Then he's like, okay, let's focus on the positive, like watching this funeral. The priest begins to give his speech, and he's like, this is boring. I'm ready to bounce whenever. Just someone serious. Maya's at a fancy restaurant with this Ben guy. We find out he's her old boss. She was his intern, hence the Lewinsky of it all. I don't like him. I don't like him at all. This conversation pissed me off. I hated Maya in this episode. I hated this man. I hated all of it. Maya has become my least favorite character breaking my silence. But he, like, assumes that Maya and Tallulah will be at a 4 May dinner because she's trying to make Tallulah a fashion girl, and that's, like, a big fashion dinner in New York. I just don't like him. It's very much like, well, obviously you would do this because, like, he demeans, he, like, belittles the Ritz deal. I just don't like him. I don't like him. He makes a comment about Alyssa's old boss grabbing her ass and her tripping and falling down the stairs as a result of that. So I feel like that is, I hope we get a bit more insight into that. I think that's clearly we're getting more information about like what Alyssa's old workplace that was referenced earlier is about. So it seems like she was some kind of victim of something and it led to her starting over. And he says that sometimes people need to get hurt to like prove themselves or something along those lines. I don't like him. I really did not enjoy him at all. She is drinking a lot of wine and he is not drinking as much wine as she does. After the dinner, Maya calls Dylan and he's having his game night with his colleagues because she's like, oh, I got out of work early. And okay, also I said earlier that it's the Forbes photo shoot. I'm not sure if it was the Forbes photo shoot or if it was just a photo shoot for, I think it was for Forbes, but I can't remember if they ever said it was for Forbes. And I'm like, maybe it was just a photo shoot. I don't want to assume that it was Forbes. It's just the last episode they mentioned Forbes. Anyways, not that it super matters, just to be clear. I'm like, what if the Forbes photo shoot is in a later episode and I just said it happened now? Anyways, Maya calls Dylan, says she got out of work early. And he's having his game night. She's never been able to go because she's always at work. So she's like, great, I can finally join you. Alani, Tallulah, and Charlie are walking out of the funeral. Charlie's focused on how crazy Andrew was to approach him at a funeral. Then these girls pass them and shout out Tallulah. They're like, lesbians love crackers. They're like confused. Tallulah's like, do I just look gay right now? Like, what do you mean? Like, I'm sure they saw my Ritz commercial, but like, do I look like a lesbian right now? And then they happen upon a big mural of Tallulah and like Ritz, and it's like the rainbow flag. And it's so cute. I loved it. It was so fun. It says proud to spread queer stories. And Charlie's like, I know why proud is italicized, but why is spread? And Alani's like, it's like you spread something on a cracker. It was so cute to me. I'm sorry. Tallulah's freaking out about it. She's like wondering why Maya didn't text her. Apparently she did. Tallulah storms off. She's upset about this mural. Charlie's like, this is humiliating. He misses when people were homophobic. And he's like, I'm feeling homophobic today towards Andrew. And Alani's like, if you hate him so much, why do you still have a sex tape with him? And Charlie's like, I keep everything. If I threw away anything related to trauma in my life, I'd live in an empty apartment. Like, damn, real. Alani says that they should get rid of it now. Like, she knows that he said that when he drowned at the Americana, they should burn it then, but like, they should just do it now. And he says she's right. And then he's like, wait, did your psychic tell you that I was gonna drown at the Americana? And she says, I can't say. I love Alani. That's very specific. Which, the Americana, literally, I just, again, I mentioned this earlier, but if you just skip to the section, you wouldn't know. But I did recently watch, like, catch up on Hacks. I had seen season one, but I never finished the rest. And I recently watched all of it to the point where I got to the part where she lives in the Americana, which is so slay. I remember when my sister was watching it, she was like, is this supposed to be like a knockoff of The Grove? And I was like, no, that's an actual mall in LA. It's just owned by the same guy, so it looks the exact same. Anyways, Maya arrives to her apartment and she's very drunk and very, very affectionate. She meets Dylan's colleagues. She's surprised by how young one of them, Claire, is. Apparently, Dylan talks about Claire all the time. She becomes very possessive and weird, and I hated Maya in this episode. I hated Maya in this episode. I really did. She pissed me off so badly. I was deeply uncomfortable watching her the whole time. Anyways, sorry. She's, like, very possessive and weird. She, like, tells him to go to the bathroom with her, and she tries to hook up with him, but he, like, feels weird. He's like, everybody's outside. Claire's outside. And she's like, oh, yeah, Claire. I should get to know Claire because you like her so much. Like, I hated this. I hated this. I just really, again, with the, like, I don't know. And maybe it's because I've never been in a relationship, but, like, I hate this idea of, like, being possessive. It's like, if I genuinely feel so, insecure in a relationship where I'm like, oh, he's definitely looking at his, like, colleague in a romantic capacity, then, like, I just wouldn't want to be in a relationship with somebody. If I'm, like, that insecure because your colleague is somebody who's, like, young and attractive, it's like, I would hope that our relationship is more than you just thinking I'm young and attractive. And if genuinely, and if you are attracted to your colleague to the point where you wouldn't want to be with me, then I don't want, like, I just, it irritates me. It's like, oh my God, God forbid Claire is young and pretty. Do you think that he likes you or not? And I understand too, that this is coming off of, like, I can understand where Maya's coming from because obviously Maya's at a very pivotal transformative part, like, era in her life, her Saturn return. Obviously She's a manager now. She's getting deals. Things are changing for her professionally. I understand where Mai's coming from. Her boss, who she really admires, is like, you don't need to be in this relationship. She sees the relationship that her boss is in, and she's thinking, I don't want to be in that kind of relationship. I understand her thought process. She just had a dinner with her former boss, who she clearly had some kind of relationship with, and he very much was talking to her about, like, where she is professionally in her career, and, like, you know, there are people who, like, see the hurricane and, like, want to run towards it, and very much, like, I understand where she was coming from. I can understand it. It just irritates me. Anyways, at Alani's place, which I guess is Tallulah and Alani's place, like, she lives in Alani's apartment, Tallulah is, like, on the couch scrolling Instagram, looking at pictures, people at the mural, and she's spiraling. Then Tessa arrives, and Tallulah's like, oh, you were probably with all your gay friends, and they probably were all talking about the baby gay who loves crackers. Tessa has no idea what she's talking about. Tallulah shows her, and then Tessa shows her something. She's like, this will make you feel better. And it was a Hamilton-inspired segment that she did, and it was so funny. It was so funny. I loved it. She was like, how does a ham and cheese I don't know. It was so funny. It was so good. It was so good. I loved it. And Tallulah doesn't know what Hamilton is. So she didn't understand the genius because she's like, I need to see that again. And Tessa's like, her main point in showing her this is like, people are going to judge what you do for like a bag, but like, it's fine. You know what I mean? And then Tallulah wants to see it again. And Tessa's like, I'm not showing it to you again, but I bet you want it to be in the room where it happens. And Tallulah's like, what do you mean? And she's like Hamilton. And she's like, what's Hamilton? Like, she didn't even understand. She just thought it was funny that she was like rapping about a breakfast, which was funny. But I'm like, no, it was genius. It was genius. If you know the lore, you know the lore. It was so funny. Anyways, Charlie and Alani are at like a camera shop because he needs help figuring out which tape is which. And the employee goes to check if they have the proper cables. While he's gone, Alani notices a ticket to a premiere. That was their first hangout as friends, and they reminisce. Then the employee comes back and he says that they don't have the right cables for that. So he would have to digitize it by hand and then send the files via iCloud. But he says there's also a workstation in the back. And Charlie's like, is it private? And the employee's like, yeah, we have a lot of people who come in here looking to watch old sex tapes. Charlie's like, no, we're not looking to watch old sex tapes. I just need to make sure which one of these is a sex tape so I can destroy it. They watch in the back, and the first tape they pick is the tape. Alani's like, okay, we don't have to keep watching. And they're like, no, let's watch a little bit. And then he's like, actually, can I have a moment? And Alani steps out. He watches a little bit, and then he texts Lucas that he's thinking about jerking off, and the text doesn't go through, and he starts crying. And this is actually, like, it was really sad. It was really sad of him trying to be, like, trying to connect with this friend, and then his, like, it was sad. It was sad. And I think it's, like, while the show is obviously a comedy, it is a very beautiful, like, obviously this is a minor character, but it is very beautiful to see how this very brief relationship with Lucas is having such a deep impact on Charlie, you know? Like, I think when I watch shows, I always like to think about, like, turning points and things that are, like, pivotal moments for characters. And I think obviously for Maya and Tallulah, like Tallulah moving and what that means for Maya in a professional sense, in a friendship sense, obviously it's going to impact her relationship. Like, that is a big turning point for Maya. I think meeting Lucas is going to be a very interesting turning point for Charlie. It already has begun to be one. And I really liked that. I really liked this moment that was like sad, but heartwarming. Like, it was sweet. It was a nice moment in a funny show, you know? Anyways, Maya back at their place is still being very weird at the game night. And she suggests playing We're Not Really Strangers. They're like, I don't really know what that is. And she's like, for example, one of the ones would be like, who here would you bury a body with? Then they all like it. And she's like, okay, I'll start. Claire, who here would you most want to fuck? It's very uncomfortable. She like insists the Claire answer, but like Dylan ignores it. Then she later corners Claire in the kitchen about this. And Dylan is upset with her, understandably. And I was too. I was also very angry at her in this moment. Tessa and Tallulah are at the mural and they throw paint on the mural. And I was like, girl, you're gonna be charged with a hate crime, okay? You're vandalizing a gay mural. Yes, you're gay. Yes, it's your mural. But they don't know that. They're gonna think it's a hate crime. I knew that immediately that was gonna be where it went to. Anyways, a car pulls up. They run off and kiss. And I was like, this is so Tay Van coded. This is like when they like killed a waiter and they ran off. They didn't run far enough though. They barely went around the corner. Maybe it was implied that they went a bit farther. I'm like, the sequence for Tay Van, they were like running a lot farther. Anyways, if you know, you know. Maya, back at their place, Maya has changed. She comes out in a new outfit, but Dylan's colleagues are leaving. As they're leaving, one of them hands her a package that came for her. And another one mentions that she got an alert on their on her Citizen app that there was a hate crime in Silver Lake, an anti-gay hate crime. Maya, meanwhile, she opens the package. It was from Ben. It was about the hurricane comment, like, for the hurricane. I don't fucking know. I hate this man. Then Maya and Dylan fight. He gets mad at her. He's like, it's like you're trying to make me angry. And she says, yes, you're hot when you're mad. And they hook up. It's an angry hookup. And she imagines her old boss while they're hooking up. I hated this. It made me so uncomfortable. I don't like them anymore. I know I talked earlier about how, like, I actually kind of like them as a couple. I don't anymore. I don't like them as a couple. I have to say I am kind of sad at the idea of them breaking up, just because I think Dylan would probably no longer be a character, because I don't know how he fits into the group beyond being her boyfriend. And I don't think that he should be her boyfriend. So I just imagine that he would not be a prominent character going forward, which does make me a little bit sad because I like him and what he represents. Because he's kind of the only person. I wonder how they met. Like, I would like more backstory on how long Maya and Dylan have been together, how they met, like what their relationship has been like. Because Charlie's in the entertainment industry. He's a stylist. Tallulah's obviously an influencer. Maya's her manager. And then Alani's like a Nepo baby. So they all kind of have a certain vibe when Dylan's like a teacher. And I'm like, how did you meet? He criticizes like endless ambition. He reads books about history. I'm like, he doesn't fit with this vibe. And I find that refreshing and enjoyable as a character, but he also doesn't fit in. So I'm like, if you know that episode of Friends after Ross gets married, like when he gets married to Emily, Emily doesn't want him to be in the same room as Rachel. And Rachel's like, I'm going to be phased out of the group. It's like your old friend Kip, I don't remember his name. I think it was Kip. Rachel thinks that she's going to be the next Kip. Like she'll be phased out of the relationship. She's going to be phased out because in reference to like an ex-boyfriend of Monica's who just got phased out of the group because he didn't have like the same connection, obviously. So that's what I imagine Dylan would be. Like, I'm like, he's just not going to be part of the group, which is unfortunate in terms of the TV, I appreciate what he brings, but I fear he's not like, but maybe not. Maybe he would come back. I don't even know if it got picked up for season 2, et cetera, et cetera. But I do anticipate the season ending with them breaking up. As soon as they're done hooking up, she says that she needs to text Tallulah, which just further feeds my prediction that at this point doesn't feel like a prediction, but I did clock this early on that I feel like the main issue in their relationship, and I believe in the trailer for the next episode, it's like he says something about how ever since Tallulah came, she's been acting weird. So I do obviously think there's going to be like, it's just feeding into it. But I think, again, this is a big turning point for Maya in terms of where she is in her professional career. So I think obviously there's going to be a huge disconnect between them, and that's going, I mean, it's already causing issues, but I think that is obviously going to be the breaking point. I just hated this episode because I'm like, just break up already. Just break up already. This was so deeply uncomfortable. Like, this was so unprofessional of Maya. I feel like on some level she's lashing out because she just saw her old boss. Or not lashing out, but she's like being self-destructive because she just saw her old boss. And I think on some level she doesn't want to be in this relationship anymore. But I really didn't like it. It really irritated me because I'm like, Claire being young and attractive doesn't mean that he, like, what are you talking about? He seems like not, like he doesn't have a wandering eye at all. I feel like she has a wandering eye and she's projecting that onto him. And it's annoying. And I know obviously it's supposed to elicit, like, I'm not supposed to like her in this moment, but I really, really, really didn't like her. And I'm sad because I feel like Dylan is just not going to be a character anymore. And I also understand why Dylan would be a character, because what relationship does he have to the others outside of being Maya's boyfriend? So I don't know. But I like what he brings to the show as somebody who lives in LA and doesn't work in the entertainment. I mean, I'm not a teacher. Anyways, those are my thoughts on I Love LA and quite a long rant that I went on about The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives season 3 reunion. Hopefully this episode is out sometime Wednesday. I believe in myself. I do think it'll be out then. Then Percy Jackson premiere season 2, my thoughts on that, recapping that, not just like sharing my thoughts. I am going to be recapping the show formally. That will be out sometime this weekend. And then mid next week, I'll be back with another I Love LA episode. Maybe I'll talk about hacks for the second half of that episode if the I Love LA portion is too short. I don't really know. I'll figure it out as I go. If the Percy Jackson episode takes me too long, maybe I'll just talk about the next 2 I Love LA episodes together instead. I don't know. I'll figure it out. I'll play it by ear. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Follow me wherever you listen to podcasts so you can get notified when I upload a new episode. Like and subscribe if you're listening to this on YouTube. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you have a great week.